This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The primary focus of this prayer treatment will be on plank number 24 of 32 total planks, as referred to the 32 planks, which are the platform of the system of divine metaphysics, and that is covered in the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy, on pages 330 to 340. The introduction to the system of divine metaphysics is stated on page 146, wherein Mary Baker Eddy states, "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease." Einstein's good friend, Dr. Underwood, was on the Atomic Energy Commission of the U.S. government. Everyone on that commission passed on except for Dr. Underwood, and the cause was determined to be radiation. Professor Einstein had had a passing interest in Christian Science, but when he discovered that his friend had his life saved as a result of the studying of Christian Science and the works of Mary Baker Eddy, he took a total interest in it, attended the local church, and studied in the local reading room. He made these statements: "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. Christian Science, in its two-word title, tells you exactly what it is. It is both science and religion. The greatest religion there could be, because it's the only one that is known to man that teaches one how to heal. And that it is according to a science, which means that anyone that understands the science can have the same kind of results, healing." Einstein was so impressed with Christian Science that he made this statement. Imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. And he also said this: "Blessed art thou, for everything that really is in this book." He even capitalized the word thou in referring to Mary Baker Eddy, which means he was really looking to her as a god, or the god. Of course, she is not God, but she is an extremely important messenger from God who fulfilled her mission as disclosing to the world the science of the healings of Christ Jesus. You could talk to a million people that claim to be Christian Scientists and rely on it for their health and well-being, and they wouldn't really understand exactly what one would be referring to when they would read those sentences that were just read to you. One, the divine metaphysics is reduced to a system, and there are 32 planks that comprise the platform, which is intended to be the foundation upon which one stands in order to build their understanding of the science of the healings of Jesus, which means it would be equipping themselves to be able to do the same kind of healings that Jesus did. And of course, the last 101 pages of the textbook, pages 600 to 700, are filled with 486 different ailments that were healed by 85 testifiers that have been verified. There is a button in both the header, which is the top of every single page on the website, and the footer, which has two words of a description: heal everything. We give you the specific steps that would enable you to do just that. And we didn't create this. These are taken from what was utilized by those 85 people in the last 101 pages and have been utilized by millions of people from 1866 to the present. Is it possible to study the works of Jesus and the works of Mary Baker Eddy and perform healings without giving adequate credit to both Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy? Let me tell you in short order what happened when people tried to do exactly that. The day Mary Baker Eddy passed on in December 1910, the board of directors removed her picture from the textbook. They forbid those who lived in her home, who were there to promote Christian Science and to protect it, from being covered up by so-called evil forces. These wonderful people were threatened with excommunication if they would give credit to Mary Baker Eddy or to discuss her or write about her in any way. Fearful of losing what they thought was valuable, and that is membership in the Mother Church, they obeyed these evil demands. What was the result? Mary Baker Eddy has named the day that she was healed in 1866 the date of her discovery of Christian Science. And from that day until 1910, only 44 years later, churches had been established all over the world with millions and millions of members experiencing healings of every kind of ailment you can imagine. The mystery. Then what happened? The momentum was so strong on the day that she passed on that the membership actually kept growing, even though they were threatened with that kind of fear-mongering, until around 1950, some 40 years later, it had peaked out and then started to decline. At first, slowly, and then it accelerated. And today, instead of 40 or 50 churches in the larger cities throughout the world, you will be lucky to find two or three churches. So what is the mystery? What really happened? The attempt was made to separate the discovery and the discoverer. That is covered in the Ten Commandments by the commandment that says, "Thou shalt not steal." And also, "Thou shalt not kill." "Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor." How about the golden rule? "Do unto others as you would have others do unto you." Or another version, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." When a Pharisee asked Jesus what is the greatest commandment of all, he replied, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it: love thy neighbor as thyself." He put them together. There is no such thing as the greatest commandment, because the greatest commandment consists of two commandments. And love thy neighbor as thyself is not even one of the official Ten Commandments. But as far as Jesus was concerned, it was there with the very first one. Together, united, cohesive, and could not be separated from each other. Jesus said that thinking something is the same as doing it. If you are a Christian Scientist, or even if you are not, but you have read at least part of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, did you read enough to get an inkling of how valuable that textbook is that she gave to the world, even uncopyrighted, so that anyone could do with it what they wanted without fearing legal repercussions? Have you ever had a healing? Did you give profuse credit to Mary Baker Eddy for the wonderful thing that she delivered to the world, the textbook which outlines exactly Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics has every one of its elements tucked inside that book? How about anyone that has helped us in any way? Have we given gratitude to them? The buttons on the website, in the header and the footer, that have the two words of heal everything, it is emphasized that the very first step is to transform our thought, speech, and action from the normal mode of operation, which is taking, to the mode of operation, which is giving. I read just recently, someone said, everything you have taken when you pass on must be left behind. You can't take a single thing with you that you've taken during your lifetime. But everything that you've given away, you can take the whole lot of it. Everything you've given away is still there, and you can take that with you when you pass on. When you go around the corner, become invisible, no one can see you because you're in a different dimension. You could be standing right beside of someone, but they won't see you because they're in a different dimension. Remember that platform with 32 planks, and is also stated in a singular way. It says when the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. If we have one plank missing from that 32 plank platform, we don't have a platform. We have an incomplete platform. And we just may fall through that open space where a plank is missing. Therefore, we need to study and understand all 32 planks as a unit, a cohesive matrix, where each one supports the other 31. In the northwest section of California, the redwood sequoia trees stand out as being a wonder of the world. They are deemed to be the largest, tallest, and most enduring of all trees. Do you have any idea why They've been able to withstand every kind of problem that has come along that has destroyed other trees. Their roots are very shallow. You would think they would be the first ones to fall. But how do those roots develop? They bond with all the other redwood trees in the group. Nothing has been able to take them down, except for greedy people that cut down the trees with machines. I took a woodworking class when I was in high school. I had some credits available and time to do it because I'd passed all the required courses during the degree. And it was pointed out to us that redwood was one of the finest woods that anyone could use. It was totally impervious to insects, worms, disease. It was lightweight, yet it was strong. I didn't appreciate at the time that every time I used a piece of redwood, it means that part of the redwood trees had to be cut down, or I wouldn't be able to use the wood. Now I would refuse to buy redwood. And I should be making it public that what that does to something that was great, given to us to enjoy instead of to cut down. If one is a pianist and they have mastered a composition from one of the masters of music, the master composers, one should study the life of that composer so that they can really put themselves into the frame of thought the best they can, and yet being on the outside and not being the actual composer, so that they can appreciate the masterpiece that was composed, and thereby get a better feel so that if they were able to master that piece, that they could pass that on with proper due credit to the composer and the beauty of the music could more easily be appreciated to a fuller extent. I wonder how often that happens. Ashkenazi, Vladimir. Vladimir Ashkenazi, probably, arguably, one of the finest pianists that ever existed, if not the. He's Russian, and he was performing one of his performances, and he opened the audience up to a question and answer period. And during the Q&A, a well-known critic asked him, "How is it that you are able to perform with such perfection, performance after performance?" His reply was that he practiced and practiced some more and kept practicing until the music played him. He recognized that ego had nothing to do with him being able to perform. In fact, it was the opposite of the qualities that were needed to perform in perfection. He had to remove himself totally from the performance and let the music play him. Have we ever thought of ourselves in that way? That if we're striving for perfection, that we have to get ourselves out of the way? In other words, our so-called human self, with its varied number of experiences, which have a lingering carry forward of the good and the bad. Jesus washed his disciples' feet. He was trying to give an example to the disciples that they had to love each other as they would like to be loved. That was normal etiquette, because people apparently wore open sandals and they were walking on dirt roads, so their legs and feet were probably always dirty until such time as they washed them, maybe in the evening. Are we washing our consciousness of the dirt we have about ego, realizing that there's only one God and one parent mind? That's the title of this plank, God, the parent mind. The, it doesn't say a parent mind, the parent mind, the only mind, the only God. No, money is not God. A beautiful home is not God. Beautiful car, beautiful clothes. None of it counts a dime when you pass on. You can't take anything with you. And yet we spend our lives working for those things instead of working for what we can take with us, which is what we give away. And it's a crime about what the wealthiest man in the world today, who everyone knows who he is, there's no secret about it. He contributed his time, which is probably has the highest dollar value of anyone living today, probably equal to or maybe even exceeding the President of the United States. It's not my job to evaluate that, but it certainly is up there at the top. He established, upon the encouragement, of course, and support of the president, to establish a Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And the purpose was to determine how in the world the U.S. government could spend so much money, and yet what do we have? An infrastructure that is in total disrepair. Potholes in highways and local streets. Bridges that fall down. We don't have hardly any clean water unless we buy it that has been processed, removing all the junk that is put in there with fluoride and all that kind of stuff. We have rivers that are filthy. Many people unemployed and homeless. There are problems that ought to be solved. And there is tons of money that could solve them all being spent. Or are they being spent, or are they just being laundered? A sizable portion of the national budget for America and many other countries is a money laundering operation. Thomas Burke said, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." And that's exactly what has been happening for decades upon decades, if not centuries upon centuries, if not thousands of years. There have been plenty of time to clean up the act of civilization, but a combination of fear that we're going to run out of something we need, such as food, shelter, and clothing, and money to pay for frivolous activities, that our whole lives are consumed on a fear that we're not going to be able to survive unless we are a taker, taking everything we can get. If it's for free, wow, we go for it whole hog. If it's a big price savings, oh wow, we stock up. And yet, what did God tell the children of Israel as they were going through the desert? Only take what you need for the present. Don't store up for tomorrow. Depend on trusting God for your needs on a daily basis. God wasn't saying to be foolish. He was saying, put your trust in spirit, not matter. Focus on spiritual qualities, not material qualities, not material activities. Because anything based on matter is not a quality, it's an absence of quality. How would your life be changed? How would my life, how would the life of anyone be changed if they really converted their effort from taking and hoarding because they're fearing tomorrow versus trusting God by having a focus on reality, which is spirit, instead of unreality, which is matter and mortality? We trust our brain when in fact, what has more intelligence? The omnipresence and omni-intelligence of God, which has no limit, it's infinite, or our brain? Laura Sargent, one of Mary Baker Eddy's top right-hand individuals living in her home to promote Christian Science and protect it from the attacks, she said, "Laura, do you sometimes forget?" What do you think Laura's answer was? Mind never forgets. She had it right there on the tip of her tongue. She lived that way. She lived in a way that she could combat whatever came up as a problem with the truth. Just like did Jesus. When the devil was tempting him, the three temptations after he came out of the desert for 40 days and 40 nights without any food or water, he didn't argue with a so-called thought of devil. Instead, he quoted the scriptures. For example, one of the questions and answer was about trusting God by jumping off of the rooftop of the temple because God will save him. And Jesus replied, God says, do not tempt the Lord thy God. If we're driving down the road and we do not have a self-driving car, which of course is available now, do we just turn around and talk to somebody in the back seat and not even look where we're driving? Not even have our hands on the wheel? saying that, well, God will save me. God will drive the car. One of the qualities of God is omni-intelligence, as was just mentioned. Is that intelligent? To expect a piece of matter called an automobile, or a motorcycle, or whatever it is, a boat, anything, to drive itself? If it has a mechanism there that is an autopilot, like these self-driving cars, it was intelligence that created the device to do that. How are we going to conduct our lives? Are we going to really realize what the title of this plank is? That God is the parent mind and not brain or matter or blood, bones, or any other material element? If we've ever forgotten something that we really needed to remember, have we ever said words such as, it will come to me? And then it did? You remembered it? It's happened to me many times. Einstein was known for not remembering details. When asked about it, he said, why do I want to clutter up my thought with details? I want to focus on the main ideas. Mary Baker Eddy says that if we have a problem, we should dig to find the real cause. She also says that evil is very deceptive and provides a convenient decoy. Evil is kind of like a mushroom. It grows when it is covered up. Remember what Thomas Burke said? Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. That was over 200 years ago he said that. Given credit for it anyway. Almost everybody that has quotes, somebody has done some kind of research and said, no, that guy didn't say that. So who knows? But it certainly is a good thought. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. In other words, the good man knows that there's a problem and it should be tended to, but he doesn't do anything about it. In this last election, 2024, there was a group of people that had an organization that were showing, training people how to assist so that the people that really had America at heart instead of themselves, what you could do to help them, how you could help the people on your local level, your local area where you live, and so forth. If you did something like that, that would be the opposite of what Thomas Burke was warning us about. Or Edmund Burke, excuse me. Yeah, he was warning us about people that know there's something that needs to be done and they do nothing about it. That organization knew something needed to be done and they were doing something about it. Are we doing our part? Mary Baker Eddy asked one of her students that had come to visit her to talk about some problem that he probably wanted advice on, how to deal with it. And she said, if you walk down the street and you see someone in need, it could be anything. It could be an animal, it could be an individual in a wheelchair, or it could be an accident, anything. What do you do about it? He didn't know how to answer. He obviously had not been doing anything about it. So when he failed to answer, she said, are you a Christian Scientist? Then he knew. He knew what he should be doing, but he wasn't doing it. You see, we have to start with our own consciousness. Don't try to correct someone else's consciousness. If we're seeing the problem as real, we have to unsee it as real. And the way we do that is through repetition of repeating something that we have some kind of an understanding about that is the truth about God's creation, the truth about God, the truth about God being the parent, the one in charge, and God being mind, the only one that has all of the qualities of mind. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, well, was co-founders, William and Helen Wright. Helen was the one really active, and she was really active. She was a prolific writer, some wonderful textbooks, and I believe her greatest work was when she, according to the human calendar, was 100 years old. She wrote the book entitled Your Divinity Revealed. And chapters 4 through 10, each one of those seven are devoted to the seven synonymous terms. Chapter 4 is devoted to mind, 5 to spirit, and so forth. And in it, in some of the chapters, I think one of them is 109 pages. In it, she gives great detail about all of the words that are used by Mary Baker Eddy in the textbook to describe each of the seven synonymous terms. So if you want to know every single word that Mary Baker Eddy used to describe mind, that book is a valuable resource. And we have the whole thing with its subtitles. And we have an image of all of the words in alphabetic order that are used for each one of the seven. And we have another series of seven books that is the actual text of the whole page with the word underlined every time it appears on the page. So you can see exactly in context how she used the word to describe that particular synonymous term. That is a valuable resource. These are all valuable resources to really embed in our thought the words that describe what mind is. Some of the more important ones are creative force, creative ability, faculty, facility, functionality, performance, power. You need to realize that in the system of divine metaphysics, it is much like mathematics in that there are 10 digits in mathematics, 0 through 9, and there's 4 operators at the basic level: add, subtract, multiply, and divide. The 10 digits don't do any good by themselves. You have to utilize the operators and know the proper algorithm to use to come up with a product, a conclusion, a result. The same thing in the system of divine metaphysics. There are 7 elements: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, the 7 synonymous terms for God. And there's 4 operators: the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word means all the facts about God. Christ means no matter what comes your way that seems to be an overwhelming problem, you have to translate it so that you're focusing on the truth, not the lie. Genesis 1 says, "And God said, let us make man out of our image and out of our likeness. Then God made man in his image and likeness." We have to let our consciousness be open to truth before it will be revealed to us. It's already in consciousness, but it's hidden like a mushroom. We have to uncover it by opening our thought to the truth, to reality, about what is real. Then God will reveal it to us. The first three words of Genesis chapter 1 says, in the beginning. Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean, in a spiritual sense, in the only. In other words, the only existence there is what is outlined in Genesis chapter 1. There was no beginning. It says in the Bible, there is nothing new under the sun. That means there is no new truth. There is no new creation. There never was a creation. Everything that is true has always been true, whether civilization is awake to it or not. It was always true. If there's a lie and a truth that are being considered in any topic, the lie will come and go and it will change. It will try to rationalize itself and everything else. But the truth is fixed. It is fixed. It is good. It is a quality of God and does not have any deviation. It's always there. Sometime maybe we will recognize it and admit it and yield our false sense of truth, which was a lie, and will then promote the truth. You see, the problem with the human brain is it is full of ego, prejudice, bias, fantasy, misunderstanding, mistakes. If we're going to get rid of that false concept of intelligence, then we have to be open to the correct content of real intelligence, which is the intelligence of God. The Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, is divided into two major parts, Science and Health and Key to the Scriptures. The first 14 chapters are Science and Health, with 14 being the title of Recapitulation, which is summarizing the first 13 chapters. And chapter 15 through 18 is Key to the Scriptures. Chapter 18 is the one referred to as where there's 486 healings by 85 people. In the Key to the Scriptures, chapter 17 is the glossary. It's kind of like Recapitulation is to the first 13 chapters. The glossary tells us the spiritual and, in some cases, the material definition of the important Bible terms. And on page 588 is the definition of the word intelligence. Substance. Self-existent and eternal mind, that which is never unconscious nor limited. Do we ever have any limitation or any limited concept of the capability of the mind that we are using, which is likely the brain, unless you're Christ Jesus, or Mary Baker Eddy, or some of the other really advanced students of Christian Science? They weren't using their brain. They were using this intelligence described on page 588. On page 468, the chapter in Recapitulation, that is designed with 24 questions and answers to keep the focus on the real key points of the first 13 chapters. And on that page, 468, is called the Scientific Statement of Being. It states, there is no life truth, intelligence, nor substance, in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God. Man is His image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. I've known people that have utilized that scientific statement of being properly, and the power of the words, if you're really getting the feel of the truth in it, can bring forth a healing. And it's recommended by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute that you substitute words for matter and for man. Instead of saying there's no life, truth, and intelligence or substance in matter, say there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in, and then name the problem, if you have the right name. Remember, evil is deceptive. It loves to put decoys out there, and you might be dealing with the symptom instead of the cause. You don't want to heal the symptom. You want to heal the cause. And by that, you need to know that there's only really one cause, among other key points. That's one of them you want to remember. There's no real material birth. There's no real material growth or death. Because matter does not enter into the realm of reality. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the true geniuses of Christian Science and many other fields that he was involved in. He's an expert electrical consultant. People came from all over the world. And this was back in, you know, the early 1900s, where there wasn't any airplanes that flew across country in short time and so forth. They came from all over the world, whatever it took. It might take him a month to get to where he was and a month to get home. But he could solve the problem in electricity. Whatever the company had, he solved the problem. And he became known, even though Pony Express was the way they were delivering some of the mail. So you can substitute the word of matter for the word of the ailment. And instead of just saying man, which is generic, put yourself in there. I am an individual manifestation of man, therefore I am whatever it says about man. Now that's not personalizing it, but it's relating the problem to the solution so you can solve it. And since your thought has probably been inundated for years and years and years about the lie of what the problem is, you might have to be repetitious in stating the truth to solve it. Mary Baker Eddy says we have to keep repeating the truth until the healing is recognized. And that's because the human mind has been conditioned with the lie. If not individually, maybe in a group or universal. It's a universal belief that we all went through a material birth, came out of the womb of a woman. The Bible doesn't say that. Even the story of Adam and Eve says that woman came out of a rib from a man. And then the woman and man got together and created something else. What you need to do is back up to verse 6 of chapter 2 of Genesis. And it says, there went up a mist. Have you ever been in a mist that was so thick you couldn't see your hand in front of your face under the name of a fog? I have. Probably some or all of you have also. If that's the kind of atmosphere we have, are we going to have clarity on what we're looking at? Not a chance. If we don't have clarity, we better be looking through a different lens. A lens that is called the lens of spirit, not the lens of matter. We better forget about the story of Adam and Eve, because that, by its very words, tells us it's a bunch of baloney. We better be focusing on the first chapter of Genesis. Now, here's something you may not be aware of. The first chapter of Genesis was written previous to the second chapter. But God had his hand in the placement of it as being the first part of the Bible. I guess God is telling us that we better learn the truth first so we can prepare ourselves to be a shield against matter trying to take over our thought. That makes sense to me. Mary Baker Eddy, in the Key to the Scriptures portion of the textbook, chapter 15, it's entitled Genesis. Very valuable chapter. She gives you the spiritual sense of what Genesis is all about. I attended a Christian Science Sunday school from the time I was able to go to kindergarten Sunday school, or whatever they call it. They didn't have kindergarten back in those days, but yeah, from the time that I could sit in a chair, I went to Sunday school. For up until age 20, you can attend Sunday school in a Christian Science church. Not a single one of my teachers, let's say I was maybe 3 years old when I attended the first little class, so probably 17 years or so, I was in Sunday school every Sunday. And not a single teacher ever pointed out to me the kinds of things that are being made key points. And it's all extemporaneous, so it's just coming to me and I say it. None of these things were brought out in all of my years of Sunday school or Wednesday testimony meetings. Not a single time. It's like all these millions of Christian Scientists didn't really read the words that were in the textbook. Like on page 146, it's all been reduced to a system. And page 330, how important those 32 planks are. So you better learn those if you want to know how to demonstrate Christian Science and bring forth a healing. No one ever emphasized that to me. It wasn't until probably the last 20 years or 25 years. No matter how many times I read that, right over the top of my head. How about the manual? The manual of the Mother Church, Mary Baker Eddy said she hoped that she would not have to write it. But she saw that she had to, because the people in her own church in Boston were way off in left field. For one, they hated her. Just like Jesus's people that he preached to hated him. Did they show up at his crucifixion? No. Did they show up at the trial? No. What did his disciples do immediately after he was crucified? They went back to their old profession of fishing. They didn't even take their weekend off. Can you imagine? 3 years he gave his life to trying to teach those people. 11 out of 12 of them were straight out traitors. And their lives did not come to a peaceful end. The lives of the ones that founded America did not come to a peaceful end, because they were being attacked by the European countries that still wanted all of the people that came here for freedom to be under their thumb. So they made it miserable for anyone that tried to establish America. Just like the ones that are attacked right now, that are trying to restore freedom in America and in all the other countries. We have our work cut out for us if we're going to be a Christian Scientist. If we see an accident, we better be treating that in our own thought. Think about a truth about accident. Here's the definition of good, G-O-O-D, on page 587. I think maybe it's 578. Anyway, one of them. Good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. If God is omniaction, can there be an accident in reality? How is it possible? It's not possible. There can be no accident if all action is under the control of God, which is only good. I think it's verse 31 in Genesis. It says, and everything God made was very good. When it says, in the morning and evening were the same. And everything God made was very good. A Pharisee asked Jesus one time, wanting to know how to get eternal life. He was a wealthy man, tax collector. He must have been collecting taxes for himself instead of giving it to the king. Anyway, he was a tax collector and wealthy, and he had everything that money could buy. And he wanted to know, okay, now how can I get eternal life? I got everything material, now I need to live forever. So he says, good master, how may I obtain eternal life? What do you think Jesus said? Look it up. And you'll find that Jesus says, why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God. Does Jesus say, I'm God? Did he say, thank you for calling me good? No, he corrected him. I'm not God. And yet, how many people call themselves Christians and worship Jesus as God? And yet they have a cross in the church that everybody looks at every time they go there, probably, with Jesus being on the cross, being crucified. And that's how they want you to remember Jesus. Not from his resurrection, not from his ascension, not from all the beautiful things that he tried to teach everybody. By the way, can you teach an adult? How about a child? How about a husband or wife? The only ones you can teach are young children. Period. They have what they call a formative age. And they soak it up and love it. And you better be doing your duty if you have young children to be utilizing that belief that them learning is only for a short period of their life, because you're wasting your time if you try to teach adults or a husband or a wife or someone else, your boss or your employees or whoever. The best you can do is point out what you see as the benefit of something, and if they are inspired, then they will learn as an adult by their own decision. So don't ever be disappointed if you think you're teaching somebody and they don't do a very good job of remembering. Because there's an enormous amount of resistance in the human brain to reject anything that is contrary to what it has been believed to be true. And that's why the corrupt media repeats lies the same way, using the same words, time after time after time, day after day, month after month, week after week, year after year, century after century. The human mind has been conditioned to be a lie to itself. And one of those lies is this big ego problem. So don't ever try to step on somebody's ego, because that's just reinforcing their resistance to the truth. The definition of ego is in the textbook, in the glossary. Look it up. You will find it's a big problem. Have you ever looked up the word hearing? To hear? Very interesting. Check it out. Have you ever looked up the word great? G-R-E-A-T. I doubt if you have. You just assume, as did I, for many years, of what it meant. Our word study, when we're studying the textbook and other writings of Mary Baker Eddy and the Bible and so forth, is an extremely valuable part of self-improvement. Mary Baker Eddy says, infinite progression is concrete being. If we don't progress on a regular, consistent basis, then we go backwards. There is no way to stay at where you are, where you freeze, where you are. You can't do it. Why? Because progress is moving forward and up. And if you do nothing, you are going into negative territory. Because the whole emphasis of divine mind is up and forward. So you're going backwards instead of staying in a frozen position. That brings us up to another great thing that Frederick L. Rawson did. He discovered how to go back in time and heal, so that the healing was effective when you first recognized there was a problem. Now, he doesn't say this, but it seems the reason that if that's the case, everything from then, which is when he could have effected a healing, or it's really truth that makes it, but he's the messenger. Everything about that problem from the time that you were healed, going back in time to heal it, to now, has been removed from memory. And it's been removed from memory of anyone that is receptive to that possibility. He starts off by saying, everything is possible to God, or nothing is impossible to God. So you have to start off with the infinite picture. Not a tiny little minuscule myopic view. Don't be looking through a real long pipe and block out your vision all that length of the pipe, and finally you see some light at the end of the tunnel. No. We have to open our eyes and look all around now. We have to be fed up with our concept of our life the way it is, and we have to have some kind of an internal feeling that there's something better. Then we can do the letting that is in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, where God said, let us make man after our image. Let us. We are involved. Because if we don't let it happen, it's going to be like Jesus when he was in Galilee. He thought he would have great success, just like Mary Baker Eddy. After she discovered Christian Science, she figured everybody's going to be flocking here and wanting to be involved. She didn't realize the resistance that mortal mind had built up over thousands and thousands, the whole millennium of years of resistance to truth, resistance to anything that is different than what it had been believed to be true. Even though it's a total lie. The CIA, oops, I wasn't supposed to mention any names. They have a program called Project Mockingbird. I mean, pay attention, people. They even have names that give away the clue on what they're doing. Project Mockingbird is to convince the public that the lie is truth, and the truth is a lie. And the director, William Casey, at that time, back, I don't know, 50 or 60 years ago, said, "We will know that our Project Mockingbird has been successful when everyone believes a lie to be the truth." And of course, they fabricate the lie. Their whole goal is for you to think what they want you to think to be true when in fact it's a lie. That's how your tax dollars are being spent. To trick yourself. To deceive yourself. The title to this prayer treatment is God, the Parent Mind. Are you going to let God be your guide? Or a government agency? Are you going to let the God that talks about the true history in Genesis chapter 1? Or the devil that's doing the talking in Genesis chapter 2? Who is the devil? It's a misconception of truth. A lie is a misconception of truth. A mistake is a misconception of truth. Getting off the track is a misconception of truth. Do you believe substance is made out of matter? That's a misconception of spirit, of real substance. We have the responsibility to guard our own thought so that we do not permit a lie to enter. Mary Baker Eddy says we should have a model that we can jump to remind ourselves when we're confronted with something that is not godlike, to focus on that. The Scientific Statement of Being on page 468 is a beautiful one. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. And you can play around with those words where it says there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. You can put anything in there you want to that is not godlike. In other words, something that needs to be healed. And where it says, and man is this or that, you can say, I'm the individual manifestation of man. And therefore, I am whatever it says about man. Forgive me if I've already said this. I had a substantial time away from the recording, and I'm not sure whether I mentioned this previously or not. At the top of the page, just below the header, there is a paragraph from page 128, which is chapter 6, entitled Science, Theology, and Medicine, and this is from the section on science. The term science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to his government of the universe, inclusive of man. From this it follows that businessmen and cultured scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. The human mind, imbued with their spiritual understanding, becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. A knowledge of the science of being develops the latent abilities and possibilities of man. It extends the atmosphere of thought, giving mortals access to broader and higher realms. It raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity. Page 128. So is there any benefit to living a life of Christian Science, which includes the Golden Rule? This paragraph makes it clear of what has been testified to by what they call cultured scholars and businessmen. So in their everyday life, it impacts their success. So instead of living in fear and therefore wanting to grab and be a taker, this enables you to be liberated. But we have to be consistent and persistent, tenacious, because we have to retrain a so-called brain that has been educated otherwise. It's been educated to be focusing on limitation instead of the infinite. Matter instead of spirit. Mortal mind instead of divine mind. And all the way down the line. Hate instead of love. Fear instead of confidence. That's what's in the universal thought. Universal belief of evil. We have to focus on the international understanding of truth. And you reflect out into the universe every time you think, say, or do it. I shall read the paragraph again of what this is all about. This number 24 of the planks. And see if there's anything that didn't come to thought that we didn't cover already. Because this is extemporaneous without any editing. So as it comes out is the way it's presented. Okay, number 24. God, the divine principle of man, and man in God's likeness are inseparable, harmonious, and eternal. 2. The science of being furnishes the rule of perfection and brings immortality to light. 3. God and man are not the same, but in the order of divine science, God and man coexist and are eternal. Because we're the image. As long as God exists, the image exists. 4. God is the parent mind, and man is God's spiritual offspring. John L. Senton is an advanced student of Christian Science, and he offers the following. The supreme relationship of being, of principle to man, and the divine likeness or mind to man as offspring is set forth as inseparable, harmonious, and eternal. In other words, our only mind is the mind of God. 2. Because in science, the rule of perfection and the divine order sustain coexistence eternally. That's why we're inseparable from the mind of God. Because in science, the rule of perfection and the divine order sustain coexistence eternally. Number 3, and the final thought, this is Christianity interpreted at its highest altitude. That is, in divine science. I mentioned about the four operators, Word, Christ, Christianity, and I didn't mention science. So Word is all the facts about God. Christ is translating whatever comes our way that seems to be a problem into us focusing on the truth about reality instead of the lie, which is the problem. And demonstration is Christianity, which is the third operator, demonstrating it, proving that you know enough about the facts about God and that you can turn your thought towards the truth instead of being inundated by error. And then comes forth the healing. And the fourth one is science, where we are already always in the atmosphere of perfection. And we're impervious to being penetrated by evil thoughts. This is a focus primarily on mind, God the parent mind. Therefore, I shall read to you the Diapason of Heaven, which is one of the seven Diapasons of Heaven, provided to Mary Baker Eddy's final class by Mary Baker Eddy, and that was her most advanced students. And so she has a Diapason of Heaven for each of the seven synonymous terms, and I shall recite to you the one that is for mind. She begins with a quote from Miscellaneous Writings, page 206. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this Diapason of Heaven. Quote, good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. Amen. This is January 20, 2025, at 16:28 on the 24-hour clock. The title to this prayer treatment, for which is plank 24 of 32, is God, the Parent Mind. Thank you for listening. The end.